Little roller up along first. Behind the bag. It gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it.
A 2-1 pitch. And a drive in the air to deep right field. That ball headed toward the wall. That ball is out of here. Out of here. A game-winning grand slam home run off the bat of Robin Ventura.
Hey. And it's hit deep to left center. Andrew Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run! Mike Piazza, and the Mets lead 3-2.
High fly ball to left. Back at the wall, and the captain's going deep, 2-1.
Turner drives one to center, chasing Nimmo back to the warning track, right at the fence. He made the catch! Oh, wow! The catch of the year for Brandon Nimmo! He took a home run away from Justin Turner!
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? The show starts in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
Episode 29, the Say Hello Podcast. Welcome. My name is Casey Lynn, and I'm joined by my co-host, former Major League pitcher, New York Met, Bill Pulsifer. We have Stephen White, our producer, behind the scenes. Of course, this episode is brought to you by roots-recordings.com. If you are watching on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button. Like, share, and subscribe at Say Hello Media on YouTube. Bill, before we get into what we always do, episode 29 and numbers that New York Mets wear or have worn. How are you today, Mike?
I'm good, man. We got a beautiful day here on Long Island. It's actually baseball weather today for the first time.
So yeah.
Beautiful.
I heard 70 and sunny in Central Park, and the city was hopping like it's March.
Yeah. They said that spring was going to come early, and we really don't get winter much here on Long Island anymore. We did have a little cold snap, but not much snow, but today was by far the most beautiful day of the year so far.
Well, enjoy it, because you know how it goes. March isn't pretty, so
yeah.
I'm sure it'll change very soon. So hopefully you got out today, enjoyed that beautiful vitamin D.
I did.
Good. We are at episode 29, so I went through the numbers. It's a good list of former Mets that have worn 29. Any off the top of your head that stick out to you?
Well, I'm going to go with Robert Person, because I do. I played with Purse, and he wore that. But I did do a little bit of research, and I found it interesting that it had Jason Isringhausen wearing number 29. And I know that I was already in the big leagues when he got called to the big leagues. But for some reason, I do not remember him wearing number 29.
Yeah.
And I always remember him as 44. But who else did I see on that list? I saw quite a few names. But
it's a good list.
Go ahead. Hit him with them.
You started with Robert Person. He wore it in 95, 96, and that was the one that came to me that I forgot about and just resonated with me, because he was traded straight up for John Olerud, you know, right? Like the greatest trade ever for the Mets.
Wow.
Like, fleets the Blue Jays. hello. But is he? Yeah, 1 year, 1995, or 29.
It was not a year. It had to be a start before he got 44. I don't know, maybe there was a kind of the Segui situation where Segui got traded for 21 right before I got called up. But I don't know. I really don't remember that. It blew my mind when I saw it.
Maybe send them a text and see.
I'm going
if
to.
Our research is right or wrong, because
I'm definitely
going to do it. I'm with you. I don't remember him ever wearing 29.
Right.
But it's a good list. Just real quick, going early to the most recent, Ken Singleton. No, not for the Mets, but 70 to 71, he wore it. Very popular Met first baseman. Dave Magnin, 86 to 89, he wore it. Frank Viola.
Yeah, Swick Music. That's right. I remember seeing that.
He wore it 90-91. Magnin wore it again in 92. So, you know, again, something with that. Person we talked about, 95 to 96. And I knew this off the top of my head because, unfortunately, I had to watch this for too long. Steve the Rain Delay Traxel.
Traxel, yeah.
Yep. 01 to 06, what was it, the human rain delay? I guess, or
actually, you know, Traxel's he does fantasy camp too, and he's a good guy, and we always bust his chops about the human rain delay.
I was thinking about it yesterday. I don't how it just boggles my mind. It always did. Why, dude, you take so long to throw one pitch? You know,
but because he was letting his health meter regenerate as opposed to the shot clock, which is apparently blowing everyone's elbow out.
Yeah, we'll get into
that. I don't think he had Tommy John.
I don't. Yeah, no, he didn't. And you're onto something there. Yeah,
I am onto something for sure.
Real quick, another first baseman. I'm noticing a little pattern here. You have Ike Davis.
Yes, right. Yep.
2010 to 2014. Then you had Brad Brock, 18 to 20, who righty reliever from the Orioles, and then Devin Marasco, backup catcher for 1 year with the Mets. And the only reason I'm including him is that we all know that Joey Votto, and if you don't know, was a free agent, just got signed by his hometown country Blue Jays.
Home country team?
Right. Non-roster invitee to the Blue Jays. And he was only following two people on Twitter. You know, he's got probably over 1 million followers. And Devin Marasco was one of them. So. Yeah,
they must have maybe went out one night on the road or something.
Yep.
For a few drinky poos or something, and hit it off a little bit. Maybe who knows?
Obviously, Marasco played for the Reds, and definitely probably went on the road. And I don't know why he just kept him, but the other one, the Dan Patrick show, you know, ask Joey Votto, no idea. And then the other ones, the most recent that fans would remember, Trevor Williams, 21 to 22, Tommy Hunter, 21 and 23, and right now DJ Stewart wears 29.
That's right.
Good list, yep. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
So next episode we'll see. 30 has a good pop to it.
I won't give away any, but there's a pretty popular pitcher.
I know who you're thinking of. So anyway, we gotta go as we always do. What's going on in Mets land? Well, a lot. let's first talk about what everybody's talking about right now. Mark Vientos, the DH stuff that is going on right now, and also Brett Beatty at third base. A lot of people are talking about Vientos because, well, two things has happened in the last week. J.D. Davis, former Met, was released by the Giants. We'll get into that probably right now. And also, J.D. Martinez is still not signed. And, of course, I forgot who threw out the rumor. Probably Boris himself to, you know, Heyman, you know, he's on his, you know, payroll, that the Mets have mutual interest in now signing Martinez. But I don't believe it till obviously I see it. So I ask you this, Mr. Pulsifer.
Yep.
We've talked about it until the cows come home. I'll give you my opinion real quick. There's at this point, if you get J.D. Martinez, everything that David Stearns has been preaching about kids getting the at-bats this year is all bullshit, you know, if you go out now and get a J.D. Martinez. Would I love it? Yeah. But in the middle of spring training, like what? So, again, I'll believe it when I see it. Also, J.D. Davis makes a lot of sense, but he would never come back here because he threw the entire team under the bus when he got traded for Darren Ruff at the trade deadline 2 years ago. So with all that in mind, without even the stats – it's just always something right now with Mark Vientos. And I even mentioned Beatty. Beatty's doing okay in spring training. Vientos, as of right now, 3 home runs, hitting the ball hard, which he does. Your take on all of this? Because it just seems that, like, either stick to Vientos and make it loud and clear and shut down all rumors. Or is it the reporters just Mets for clicks and have nothing else to talk about?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, we know in spring training, there's not a lot going on a day-to-day basis. Obviously this year's a little bit different with the, like we've talked about numerous times, the amount of free agents that are still out there and a proven DH and a proven hitter and JD Martinez still being out there.
Yeah.
I mean, look, up until just a couple of days ago, I saw that Vientos had been struggling a little bit, but he's kind of turning around a little bit. We've talked about this before. I have a hard time believing that a young player can be successful as a DH because you know the pressures of all I have to do is hit. And if you get off to a poor start or you go through a bad run, well, you've got at least an inning, if not 2 innings or possibly 3 innings to sit there and contemplate your your next at bat or whatever went wrong in your previous at bat. It's good to see that he's turned it around here in the last week and starting to hit the ball. Would have been nice to have seen him go play winter ball maybe a little bit to get himself ready and show that he wants to win the job. Beatty, I guess he's having some back issues. That's never good, especially for a rotational sport like baseball. DH-wise, I mean, look, I understand what you're saying about if we're not, what are we doing? Are we getting, letting the young guys get the chance, or are we trying to get bring a veteran in? It is a little bit of a, you know, going kind of both directions with what's coming out of your mouth.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with a veteran presence there, and maybe there's something going on inside Mets land and behind closed doors where they feel like they don't feel the DH role is going to be filled by Vientos. I mean, obviously, I don't know that myself. Right. But I do believe, and I would think that the people would have the same thought process, is that's not an easy position. And it's more for veterans because they've learned how to deal with, okay, I'm in a little bit of a struggle right now, or I'm in a hot streak, or whatever it may be. I just, name me one rookie DH ever. I don't believe that's a thing. So nah, for them to try to reinvent the wheel, which I know baseball is trying to reinvent itself over and over and over again, but
yeah,
there's some things that I think are still standard, and I don't believe that rookie as a DH is one of them.
I agree. Harder for a rookie to adapt to that because you're half the time you're, you know, looking at tape or you're in the dugout and your mind is kind of wandering.
Paralysis by analysis.
Yeah. Before we go further with Vientos and all that, I would be totally remiss if I didn't announce what we are doing for the first time on the Shea Lo podcast. It just totally slipped my mind because here we are, episode 29, and we haven't done this. So before we go further, any further, I want to take this time to announce we are doing a giveaway via clues from a former or current player. All right, I'll give it, this is not a clue. Three clues, it's a former player. We'll give you that, not a clue. There'll be three more. And what we are going to do, I'm going to explain it right now. I wish I did this in the first 5 minutes. So we'll do it at the 10 or whatever mark we are in, the 10-minute mark. So we're going to give three clues about X player. It's a former player. What will happen is that if you think you have it right, you, I'm going to have to, Bill said, put this up to my face. You will be in the running.
Hold it up closer now.
How about
there
that?
There you go. That's it is, better.
It is a Jeff Kent autographed baseball. And I remember I got this at spring training, which is apropos because here we are in spring training. And the connection, which I like even better. And Bill, who was the second baseman for you when you made your major league debut?
It was Jeffrey Kent, actually.
He was there playing you go. Second base. So I love the connection. Jeff Kent played second base when Bill made his debut. So this is how it's going to go.
I think Jeff Kent's a Hall of Famer too, believe it or not. If you look at second baseman's numbers throughout the history of the game, he's got better numbers than Ryan Sandberg.
And he also, I believe, has the most home runs ever as a second baseman.
How can that not be a Hall of Famer?
Right. Well, we know media has a lot to, you know, do with that. But so,
yeah. Jeff wasn't known as a media darling, I would say.
Nope. And that, in my opinion, is what hurt it. You know, they take integrity of the game with whatever facet they want to and do whatever they want with it. But
yeah, that Ty Cobb, he was a real pillar of society.
Right. But anyway, real quick, here are the rules, okay? And about, we'll say, three clues within the podcast. So every, let's say, 15 to 25 minutes or so, we're a little late, so I'll do a clue after I explain this. You have to, what's it called? Show us proof or a screenshot of you subscribing to Shea Lo Media on YouTube. Simple enough. All you got to do, screenshot it to Shea Hello Pod on X or Twitter and just be following Shea Hello Pod on Twitter. That is it. Nothing more, nothing less. Do that and then have your guests with it. So you don't even have to show a screenshot. We can see if you are subscribed or not to Shea Hello Pod. If you want to screenshot it, great. If not, you don't have to. Have your guests, if you have a good guess of what this player is. It is not Jeff Kent, by the way, guys. The prize is Jeff Kent. Also, if there are more than one person that thinks they have the right answer for these clues, we will do a random wheel, which will have your name, and we will spin it, and that's how we will decide the winner. It's not the first person to get the right answer. So, like I said, Jeff Kent is the prize. The player is not Jeff Kent, just letting you know that. All you have to do, show proof that you are subscribed to Say Hello Media on YouTube and that you are following Say Hello Pod on X and Twitter, and guess the player.
What's the clue?
Clue number one. Thank you for asking, Mr. Pulsifer. Clue number one. This player, the answer, he was drafted and made his MLB debut with an X team and finished his career with that team. But he played with three teams in between. Clue number one. We will be back for clue number two a little while in the podcast. So hang in there, guys. All right. So back to Met Talk and Vientos. I like the fact that if you're going to stick with Vientos, play him every day. Have to. Because why they're into Vientos and they didn't go after that DH we all wanted, you know, JDM, Turner, Soler, everybody we talked about months ago, is that you have to give Vientos the opportunity to get into, no pun intended, Bill, the swing of things. You know, hard to get your swing down if you're playing once every three games, which has been the tale for him. So like you mentioned, and we won't go a lot further, he's picked it up in spring training. He's got, as of right now, three home runs, more extra base hits. And what the Mets love, and I like, how can you not, his exit velocity, for the, you know, people who don't know what that is, how hard you hit the ball off the barrel. He is one of the hardest ones for the Mets. Like when he squares up, it's over 100 miles an hour. So that's power there. You see the power. So, okay, I'm okay with it. If you're going to play him every day, stick to it. This is the year to see what Mark Vientos has.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is they got to decide. And you don't want to say it outwardly, whether it's rebuild or down year or whatever, leap year, skip year, whatever it may be. But if you got to decide, we got to find out what this guy can do. The only way you're going to find out what he can do is by running him out there and run him out there on a regular basis and give him the opportunity and say that it's your job. These are the keys to the job, And you give him a half of a season and then you determine from there, you know,
right.
But sending the young player that message, and whether it's the organization or whether it is Scott Boras going out and just trying to drop dimes a little bit about trying to get one of his clients signed, it doesn't help the young player to know that he's got to be looking over his shoulder. And I would think that baseball people would know that. I would think that the manager and the front office and that would say, you know what, if we're going to give this guy a chance, we got to give him the chance. So I don't like that he has to hear the rumors. But it makes you wonder if the rumors are behind closed doors. They don't feel like he's going to be able to do the job. Obviously, he's turned, and maybe a week ago when he was struggling, those were the clamorings a little bit. Now that he's turned it around a little bit, like you said, he's hitting the ball hard. Shit, you know, baseball's hard, and they have defenders out there. So if he is hitting the ball hard consistently, not striking out, I say you got to give the guy a chance, because maybe you do end up turning into having a tremendous DH down the line, or if he turns back into playing third base, because we obviously know Mauricio is going to be healthy at some point in time, and that might end up being his job. But you got to give him the shot if you're going to give him the shot.
I do not find it a coincidence that he was struggling earlier in spring training, and then you had what we talked about, but we didn't go into detail about JD Davis and what happened with him, and then out of nowhere, there's mutual interest with JD Martinez. So I don't find it to be a coincidence. It could be to spark, like you said, maybe, you know, behind closed doors, they weren't happy and it's just a kick in the butt for Vientos. We don't know. Pure speculation on my end. But you heard about what happened to JD Davis, right?
Yeah.
We have to talk about it, because it rarely happens. I didn't even know that this was in the CBA agreement. So what the Giants did, perfectly legal, but oh my goodness. A, JD Davis, find a new agent for, like, you. Wow. And second, the Giants should be ashamed of themselves, because what player would want to play for a team, in my opinion, who does that with what we'll explain. So if you don't mind, I'll take 2 minutes to just explain what happened.
Lay it on him.
JD Martinez went to arbitration because he's still under arbitration.
Not Martinez,
eligible.
Davis.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm going to do this all day, am I?
It's so tough to get the JDs there.
That's why. Yeah. All right. JD Davis, I'm going to have to concentrate with this one, went to arbitration, still young, and we got to start with, he wanted $6.9 million, and the Giants offered $6.4 million. What the big thing about that is not a huge difference in money, is that the Giants offered their end $6.4 million at the 11th hour. Davis's camp only had 1 hour to decide. They gave him 1 hour to be like, take it or leave it. And that's just bullshit, you know, in any endeavor in life. So that's wrong. So they went to arbitration, and JD Davis, almost did it again, won. He had a solid year last year for the Giants. Mets traded him for in the Darren Ruff trade back in 2022. That's all your reaction.
Out well.
Yeah, everybody listening, you know, wherever you might be listening, Bill had a great, great face on that one when I mentioned Darren Ruff. But it ended up, there we go with the puns. Love it. It doesn't matter, but JD Davis won his arbitration case, $6.9 million. Good for him. But the loophole that the Giants found, and it was agreed upon, so totally legal, is that if you go to arbitration, it's not guaranteed money, regardless if you win or not. It's not. So they signed Boris client and Matt Chapman, who plays Davis' spot at third, the Giants. That made JD Davis expendable. They put him on waivers. No one claimed him. Then they just outright released him. And he lost his $6.9 million because if you go to arbitration, regardless if you win, that it becomes non-guaranteed. He got $1.1 million for a termination fee, but his almost $7 million, gone. He's a free agent now, and as of right now, not signed. My goodness.
Yeah.
That's a terrible situation off of a good year, and he was having a good spring training, Bill. As a former player, wouldn't you just fucking hate that?
Yeah, that's a horrible punch in the gut to him. Obviously. And I can't believe that the Players Association would agree to that in the CBA to, if you win your arbitration case, we can release you and you don't get anything. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the one thing that has always made baseball a little bit different than the other sports is the guaranteed money thing. And that's why the guys want the big long contracts, because they know that the money is going to be there. So that's a shame. That's a shame that that's the case. And I'm sure JD Davis probably saw the writing on the wall a little bit when they signed Chapman. So bummer for him. I like JD Davis as a player, but I'm sure you're going to get into a little bit about what happened when he left. So that's the marriage or the remarriage, a little bit of muddy waters a little bit.
So that's what happened with Davis. For the record, I don't think Martinez or Davis, they're not going to the Mets, but for discussion wise, it's fascinating. What Bill just mentioned is true. Davis, as recent as last year, was still bashing the Mets organization on his way out about the firing, if you remember, of Chili Davis, their hitting coach back in 2020. He threw players under the bus. This is through the New York Post. He didn't hold back when he was traded. And that will burn a bridge. It was under the Cohen regime when they traded him. I don't see a reunion with the Mets because of that. If he didn't throw the Mets and the organization, the players under the bus, I could see it. Veteran presence, if you will, at third.
And a good player.
Would have made sense. Yeah, and a good player that wouldn't be a lot of money now. But because he threw them under the bus, burned that bridge, if you will, I can't see him coming back. But it's fascinating to talk about, because all this had to happen in a really – shitty way to even talk about this, and it all, unfortunately for him, unraveled that he's on his couch right now.
Yeah,
but I don't see him. I don't know if you agree. I don't see him coming back to the Mets after what he said.
It is a new regime, and I'm not 100% sure what players he was necessarily throwing under the bus. I did like J.D. Davis as a Met. I liked his approach at the plate. I think that he probably wasn't really happy about having to move between left field and third base and back and forth and first base. And yeah. I'm sure that that probably bummed him out a little bit. And then knowing that there was young guys coming up behind, that he probably felt as a veteran player that he was a more suitable player and a more successful player and already proven himself. So I think he was probably a little bit bummed out, probably didn't want to get traded at the time. It's a shame that it's the New York Post, because there's a possibility that he might have been thinking he was talking off the record, and it was too juicy of a story for them not to be printed. But I don't know. I mean, I feel bad for the guy. I would love to have seen him have an opportunity to come back. But like we just got finished saying, if we're going to give these young guys a shot, now's the year to do it, because I don't think the expectations are as high as they've been in the past 2 years.
Yeah. I don't see any of the two JDs, if you will, coming back. But I agree
Why
with
now,
you, Bill.
Right? Why now?
Right. We're 2 weeks away from opening day.
Right. So they didn't do it. They didn't do it early on. Yeah. Why the change now?
The only reason would be that Martinez's contract has completely come down, obviously. Still a free agent, but still stick to your guns, you know. But for JD Davis, he'll land with a team. He's too good of a player not to, but it won't be with the Mets. But it's unfortunate, because it actually worked out in the beginning. He found the Giants, played third base, had a good year last year, and warranted him $7 million.
Another little crazy story about that is, who's the backup? Who's going to be the backup over there in San Francisco? Third baseman, Wilmer Flores.
He's basically the backup everywhere there.
Another Mets tie in there, so kind of interesting.
They got Conforto. They have Wilmer. They had Davis. A lot of ex-Mets.
And the Mets have the orange from the Giants. So
there you go. Perfect trade-off right there. one other thing.
What's the clue? Are we going 20 minutes?
I have it written down of when I want to do it.
All right.
We'll get the clue to number two after we talk about a couple of these battles that I want to get your opinion about.
Okay.
Met battles. Talked about Vientos and the Beatties. A little battle going on that I didn't see happening, but DJ Stewart has a minor league option and is not having a good spring training. He does have a major league guaranteed $1 million salary for this year. It is nice, but if you really think about it, it's great money, you know, but it's only 200 grand above the league minimum now.
But if he does get optioned down, it makes it a lot easier for you to swallow that, knowing that I can go down and get my work in, knowing that I'm getting paid the same. Because a lot of times there's a huge discrepancy between your major league contract and your minor league split. So at least that can give him the incentive to stay positive if he does end up getting not making the club or being sent down.
Right on point, and that's why I emphasize major league contract, which is, you know, guaranteed.
It's big.
No arbitration. Yeah, you know, he's guaranteed that money, even if they send him down. But there's a couple battles going on. So you have DJ Stewart, which now the JDs and the DJs are in my mind. Oh boy, I need air.
Better you than me.
And then you have Choi, G-Man Choi, who was a late addition to the Mets roster. Had a bad year last year with the Padres and Pirates, but he was not healthy. 4 months he missed with, I believe, some type of leg injury. But track record, 4 years prior, very good player.
Yeah.
First baseman, left-hander, left-handed hitter. No, he will not be taking a bat away from Pete Alonso at first base. Let's put that right to bed. But I can see Choi taking that roster spot if Stewart is still going to continue only hitting like a buck, whatever he is, you know, $1.50. Still 2 weeks to go, but that option really hurts Stewart, DJ Stewart. And Choi is a veteran who has proven over half a decade that he can hit and field. He could be depth off the bench as a left-handed batter. He could spell a Vientos against a righty as a DH. I could see how Choi could make this roster, and you could disagree, over Stewart, because Stewart does have that option.
Yeah, I mean, obviously G-Man Choi has proven himself to be a professional hitter and a successful hitter. And obviously, I've talked at length and numerous times on our pods about I like JD Stewart. I like Martinez Stewart. I like his swing. It's a shame that he's
my struggled. Head.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
It's a shame that he's struggling. You know, spring training is difficult sometimes with the numbers and that, but unfortunately when you're, and we talked about this last episode, when you're a guy that doesn't have that penciled in, penned in, that you're on the roster, the numbers do count. So it is a shame that he's struggling. But again, another situation where he's looking over his shoulder. He knows that Voit's been signed. He knows that G-Man Choi's been signed. One thing that you and I talked about through text that does help J.D. Stewart a little bit is the fact that Marte is struggling a little bit right now. So that keeps the option open, as G-Man Choi is not playing in the outfield and Voit is not playing in the outfield. So right. That does keep his options open. But obviously spring training time is running out. And the time is now for these guys to make their moves.
Yeah.
But hey, I wouldn't be mad at G-Man Choi getting some at-bats either. You know, he's proven that he can play.
Yeah, and they play two different positions. Like Stewart would be the outfielder, Choi not, but the left-handed pop is what we're talking about.
Right.
And that would be off the bench. You also said, and I laughed before, you did say J.D. Stewart, and I don't blame you.
No, I did that on purpose.
Oh, then I, okay. That was very subtle on purpose.
I said JDDJ, Martinez.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, we'll move on. Davis. Because, yep. And as of right now, guys, just for numbers, if you want to compare those two guys in this quote-unquote battle, Stewart's hitting .182 on the interstate with an OPS of 402 or 462. So not great. And then G-Man Choi, 263 average, whatever, but his OPS is 963.
And 263 so in producing today's baseball in that regard. Is like 315.
Right. Yeah. So as of right now, you can make a case for Choi over Stewart, but there's still weeks to go. So we'll see what happens. The last battle, and then we will give clue number two. On the first edition of our giveaway with three clues. And we'll talk about it after clue two again. McGill and Jose Budo. Now, I don't know how much of a competition this is for the number five starter, but after watching Budo on Thursday, he went four shutout innings. His ERA is 0.90. He looks great. And so does Tyler McGill, who has a 150 ERA, and he looks great as well. Depth is always a good thing. Obviously, whoever does not get the fifth spot in the rotation, we will see them eventually. Depth,
well, we know you,
and
we
pitching,
know you,
you'll,
you
we'll see them all.
Starters,
even Joey Lucchesi.
You know, we know that. That's nobody's going to stay healthy throughout the year. But I think that's a... Yeah.
So
obviously, I think McGill has the upper hand simply on experience alone and been on the ball club. The guy was he's opening day starter last year. But then Budo, he was tremendous at the end of the year last year. You know, he was one of the highlights of the season, basically, for the Mets. I know it was a short period of time, but for him to come up and him to show that he's capable to pitch at the major league level, like you and I talked through text, 25 years old, he's young. You know, that's a young player. I know that there's a lot of guys that are coming up nowadays, oh, he's 21 years old, and everybody expects now that you got to be 21 years old in the big leagues. That's not the case, and that really hasn't always ever been the case. So he's still a young pitcher. He's got a lot of promise.
Right.
I would think that McGill probably has the upper hand simply because of his experience with the big league club. But I'd say that his leash is shorter than it was in years past. You know, he has to – it's like put up or shut up time, or we have to, you know, move on in another direction, and maybe he gets traded or whatever it may be. But I would say that he has the upper hand.
Well, you made a good point. A lot of about how they ended last year in 2023. Both McGill and Budo pitched very well at the end of last year. Even though the Mets were way out of it, those guys are still pitching for their livelihoods. So you don't take that lightly at all. And they had both continued it in spring training. Both Budo and McGill ended last year really well, and they pitched in their limited starts in spring training in 24 really well. So I agree with you, Bill. McGill has the upper hand because he has made an opening day start back in 2022, I believe it was. Five shutout innings against the Nats. Look great. You know, Big Drip is his nickname. Cool and collected on the mound. And Budo's the opposite. Budo's got that swag, you know, and emotion, like the opposite.
Hey, everybody does it a different way.
That's okay.
I know, I feel.
Different personalities.
Light a little fire under McGill's ass, but hey, man, everybody plays a little bit different, you know. Not everybody plays with their hair on fire. Not everybody plays like the tortoise and the tortoise and the hare race, you know. Everybody's different.
Yeah. So that's the last battle, you know, and I use battle in quotes if you're – I'm putting the quotes up if you're listening.
Yay.
I have no idea why balloons are going off on. We're Code celebrating. I guess announcing the next. That was really weird. Well, before clue number two, I guess balloons would make it perfect. Jose Quintana, we'll just briefly talk about, was announced as the opening day starter for this year, 2024. That will be a great trivia question, Bill, 20 years from now. Like, who's the opening day starter in 2024 for the Mets? It's a lot of people will have a hard time with that remembering.
Well, unless the Mets surprise the world, and obviously would be a tremendous season and make a long run into the playoffs, and Quintana wins a Cy Young award, well, then it might be a little easier. That might be asking a little much, but hey, man, the games haven't been played yet.
Yeah, you're right. I thought you were going a different way. They surprised the world and signed a Cy Young recovery. I was going to laugh.
I think the cross-town team has a better chance of that.
Yeah. Exactly. So those balloons, if you're watching on YouTube, I don't even know if you saw it. Bill did. I saw it. I don't know what in the world that was, but perfect way to go into clue number two. Again, Jeff Kent is the prize.
There you go.
I'll hold it up right to the camera. If you're watching on Say Hello Media, please like, share, and subscribe. Autographed baseball, Jeff Kent, who played second base when Bill Pulsifer made his MLB debut. Clue number two. Ready? Let's see. Clue number two. This person, and I will read clue number one. Should I, actually?
No, they had their chance.
Again. No, I'm not. Right. Clue number exactly. Clue number two. This player won championship rings with two different teams. So if you remember clue number one, you have that in your pocket. Now, all right, the first time we're doing this, okay, fine. Clue number one was this player was drafted and made his MLB debut with X team and finished his career with that team, but he played with three different teams in between. So started career with X team. Ended career with X team. In the middle, played for three different teams. That was clue one. Clue two, we just said it. He won two World Series in his career, but with two different teams. We will have clue number three in a little while. And again, this is a new game that we're incorporating. It's a giveaway. All you have to do is on Twitter, X, Say Hello Pod, that is the username. Screenshot that you are subscribed to Say Hello Media on YouTube. Guess the player. We'll have one more clue later in the podcast. And be following Say Hello Pod. And obviously guess this player if you think you know it. It's not the easiest player, but I'll announce it next podcast. You'll be like, oh, man. So maybe you'll have to do a little research. We'll have clue number three in a little bit. One more thing before we get into our mailbag, Mr. Pulsifer. We got to talk about Gerrit Cole because Gerrit Cole is the unanimous reigning Cy Young Award winner in the AL, and he got he complained about his elbow not recovering, his arm, in between starts, and he has been shut down, and he has gotten an MRI. They didn't like what they saw. And he's en route to L.A. to meet with the doctor in person. Not good. You unfortunately had Tommy John surgery. I'm not saying I don't know what they diagnosed him. It's a lot like Jacob deGrom, but they want more opinions from different doctors. If I'm a Yankee fan,
well, look, there's only
I
one
am
ligament
really
in your elbow
worried.
That pitchers need to worry about. So it's not, if they're talking about the elbow, then it's obviously the ligament. That's what it boils down to. There's so many things that I've had to think about this over the last couple of days as somebody that went through Tommy John and all of the changes that are going on in baseball. So this might take a minute for me to get it all out. But I was watching the game the
go,
night that
yeah, go for it.
On March 1st, which was things that kind of where things kind of started there, where he didn't bounce back after that. My mind was blown. I'm watching Garrett Cole give up two runs and getting taken out in the first inning. And then I briefly look away as they finished the inning. I didn't really watch the bottom half. And I look up at the start of the second inning and Garrett Cole's back out on the mound. And I'm like, what in the hell am I watching? I was unaware of the rule where they're allowed to now do this. So taking Garrett Cole, who is an utmost competitor, him being embarrassed, being taken off of a mound for the first time in his life, where I don't know whether he was aware or not aware that, oh, by the way, you're going to come back out and start the second inning. He pitched the second and third inning and was lights out. I am willing to bet the type of competitor that Garrett Cole is, in a situation early in spring training where he wasn't ready to air it out completely, he was pissed off and embarrassed, went out there and aired it the fuck out. Didn't recover right away. The shot clock. Yeah, that's the first thing that comes to mind when I
wow.
think, like, the guy was pissed off. This is Garrett Cole. Garrett Cole is a beast, and he was pissed off, and he went out there and said, these guys aren't getting any more fucking runs off of me because I'm not having them come and take me out again and then say, hey, by the way, you're going to come out and pitch the third. Because in our day, if you needed to throw your pitches and you struggled early on and we had to get you out, you went down to the bullpen and you simulated a couple of innings and you kind of nursed your wounds a little bit. So whether he was aware or not that he was coming out, I don't know. Maybe they told him as he come, hey, don't worry, you're coming back out for the next inning, as he walks off pissed off. But anyway, the shot clock. I can name starters right now. Ohtani, Buehler, May, DeGrom. I had five, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Frontline starters going down with bad elbows. Don't tell me that the shot clock is not having an issue with the pitchers, because that's nonsense. It absolutely is. The way that I look at it is, let's say we're playing Street Fighter, you and I, video game, and we get into a scuffle, and you hit me a few times. My health meter goes down. I can't step right back into the fight right away. I need to let my health meter come up a little bit before we get into another kerfuffle, if you will. So the fact that these guys are being forced to throw the ball without the lack of recovery in between pitches is definitely an issue. You look through frontline starters being injured with elbows, and it's Smoltz, Kerry Wood, name me a bunch more, you know? Obviously now Glasnow's had through it, which leads me to my next thought about this. You've taken away everything that the guys can put on the ball. You know, you're not even allowed to put rosin on your pants. If they find that there's rosin on your pants, that's a flag. As soon as Glasnow got injured, the first thing that he said was, you guys took away everything, and now we have to grab the frickin' ball harder than we've ever had to grab the ball in order to get a grip on the ball, because I don't have anything to help me hold the ball. Now, it got to the point to where it got out of hand with the spider tech and all that. But I'll tell you this, as somebody who pitched for 20 years, I never once used alcohol, rosin, shaving cream, pine tar, and I used all of those things. Never once used those things to try to make my pitches better. I used that stuff to try to get a grip on the ball. So I think that the powers that be in the game that never stood on the mound, taking away everything from these guys, other than just some rosin bag that now is league mandated. You see the little rectangle sitting out behind home, behind the rubber. That's not even what the rosin bags used to be, because they're so worried that the guys are putting stuff inside the team-issued rosin bags that that's not even allowed. So I think that Garrett Cole has got a lot of things going on, and I think that it's those three things for sure, you know? And it's unfortunate, but I think that they need to rethink this shot clock thing, because the frontline starter is kind of like quarterback in football. If you don't have frontline starters, your product as a sport is not as good as it could be. Same thing with, if you don't have frontline quarterbacks, your product as a sport is not as good as it could be. So I think that they're going to have to rethink the ball, the seams on the ball, the shot clock, and just, I don't know, it's a shame. I hope that he's all right, but I'm wondering, they say 1 to 2 months. That sounds right about the time to get a PRP shot and hope that whatever is damaged in there that they're not letting on has an opportunity to try to heal, and then he can start again. So they say 1 to 2 months. I'd be willing to bet it's going to be closer to the All-Star break, because 1 to 2 months might be when he starts to throwing again and then builds his way up to being ready to pitch. Sorry, rant over.
Hey, definitely wasn't around. A lot of good information there. The only person that I believe put a timeline on that was John Heyman. And Jeff Passan, who I believe, in my opinion, is the most reliable reporter, and he works for ESPN, he actually on Twitter took a shot at Heyman. He was like, don't put a timeline on this, because they haven't even announced what the hell's wrong with them.
We're still going to see doctors.
And, right. So, in a way, right. So, there shouldn't be a timeline until you actually know what the hell's going on. Maybe they know. But
your opinion from the doctor, when you hear I'm going for a second opinion, that's probably because you had bad news. And you're hoping that somebody else is going to say something different.
Yeah.
You know, and say that, oh, no, I don't see that, or, oh, I think that we can go about it another way. It's definitely some ligament damage, something. Look, everybody that throws at the major league level has some form of fraying or something in that UCL ligament. It's just a matter of how severe is it and how close are you to it popping, or can we fix it a little bit? Because, like, Shohei didn't even say what his procedure was, but we know it was a UCL. I know that they're doing the bracing now, where they actually have something where they sew they put braces on either side of it and sew that into the existing ligament to try to avoid the taking out of the palmaris longus, and which is a tendon on your wrist, or they have ones behind your hamstring, which I'm not sure the name of that, because I didn't use that. I used the palmaris longus, and they're trying to find ways to not have that surgery be as evasive. And another one, well, I'll use Tanaka as an example, is the PRP, which is the platelet-rich plasma, where they draw your blood, they put it in a centrifuge, they spin the centrifuge and make it into the pure plasma, and they inject it right into the injury. I'm willing to bet that that's probably going to be the step that the Yankees have to take first, and then hope.
Well, we have, right. And we have to, again, with the timeline, find out what is the actual diagnosis, you know? So that's why Passan called him out. So that was not a rant. That's a lot of good information. You know, someone who's gone through this, unfortunately. I don't wish for an injury on anybody. So I do wish Garrett the best. And hopefully,
it's a careful situation. And I look back to when I got injured. And I remember being in Dallas Green's office when they first told me, after I got my first MRI, and they said, look, he's got a sprain in his ligament. And Dallas saying, well, we got to be careful the way that we go about this, because the baseball world is going to go on fire hearing about this. And this was in 1995. And at the time, I was, a top prospect in all of baseball. So they want to be careful with what they're saying about Garrett Cole, because that's a huge baseball story if the reigning Cy Young Award winner who plays for the New York Yankees goes down. So, but the thing is we're so many years on now that when you hear elbow, there's one thing. The second thing could be flexor pronator tendon, which usually if your flexor pronator tendon is starting to go, it's because the ligament has decided I can't take anymore. And then the stress, that's just the way the body works. The stress then goes to the next closest area, which is the tendon that runs right over the top of the UCL and the joint itself.
You never want to have an elbow anything as a pitcher. We'll leave it at that. So, we wish.
It's a bummer for baseball. I know. Mets fan, Yankee fan.
Like you always said early on.
Baseball is better when top line guys are out there. And Garrett Cole is a top line guy. And, whether you're a Mets fan or a Yankee fan, if you can't sit down and watch Garrett Cole pitch and appreciate that, then you're just a fanboy. You're not really a fan of baseball. And because baseball is better when the top line guys are doing the best that they possibly can.
Right. Totally agree. So we got to move on.
Yeah.
For the sake of time, we do have a mailbag and quick pitches to get to. We'll do clue number three after the mailbag. So we'll try to go a little quick with the mailbag. We can't get to every question, but as people know, and if they don't know, every podcast on Shea_hello, we put out there. If you have questions for Bill or me, Met related or MLB related, shoot us a question and we will read it live on air. And that is exactly what we're going to do right now.
Always.
So, Bill, are you ready? Always. Let's start with Jeff Cohen. He has a podcast, Baseball and BBQ. Totally recommended. He's got a question for both of us. He goes, Bill, can you let the fans know how the scouting and recruitment process went for you?
Okay. As you things were are much drafted. Different than nowadays, because there wasn't as many, there wasn't travel ball and there wasn't as many showcases. But I do remember playing in a few like all-star showcases where your high school coach or your, I played American Legion, or your American Legion coach would select the top guys from his team or a top guy from his team. And then all the guys in the area would do that. And then you would go and you would play in like a showcase tournament, and there would be college scouts and pro scouts there to watch. Going into my senior year, I played for a team called the Orioleanders, which obviously was affiliated with, and nowadays they would call an Oriole scout team. And that's what I played in the fall. And that again was now the upper echelon, not just the college prospect guys. And then obviously for colleges at that time, I went to early, you know, sophomore, junior year, I went to baseball camps at universities. And when you go to those camps, then there would be multitudes of colleges there to also evaluate the players. But then back to my senior year, played for the Orioleanders. That was like a pro scout team where pro scouts would from the area would come and watch you play on the weekends. Then leading into my senior year in the spring, it was scouts at because I don't ever remember ever seeing a scout at American Legion games, but I do remember, and this is where things have kind of changed a little bit, is most of the scouting will get done in the summertime for these kids when they're playing with their travel ball teams. Now, obviously, I was drafted out of high school. My senior year, every start that I made, there was 26 teams. There was at least 26 scouts there, one from each team, if not multiples, if cross-checkers had to come. And I remember them lined up in the bullpen back behind the dugout and watching me throw there. And then obviously getting on the mound, having the stands would be basically full of scouts, which was awesome. You know, it brought a lot of attention to the school and it brought a lot of attention to our team. And my team was actually ranked in the nation my senior year. We choked, unfortunately. But that's kind of how it went down. And then I was in the history class. I want to say I was in history class when I got called out of class down to the office to be told that I was drafted in the second round by the Mets.
Awesome. You'll never forget that for the rest of your life. You know?
No.
Because it's a special that doesn't special happen thing, to most people. Sure. You know, so.
And yeah. Thank you, Jeff. Jeff's
absolutely.
A good fan of the
good
show.
Good question, Jeff.
Of the show. Love him. Yep.
Yeah. Great question. He has a quick question for Casey, and I appreciate it. Jeff asked me, Casey, if you could, is there a rule that you would like to change, remove, or install in the game? Well, yes, many. With all the new bullshit that has been implemented in the last couple of years, for the sake of time, we can't get into all of them. But if I had to choose one, I will go with the most recent one that I wasn't even aware of till a couple of games ago in spring training, watching the Mets versus, I forget who the hell they were playing, Joey Wendell on a pickoff, I think, tried to block the bag with his foot, which is normal. And, you know, or I forget if it was a pickoff or any type of play to second base, that is where he was covering. And he put his foot down to block the bag, and now they called it interference and awarded the runner third base. What are we doing? So that is what I would like to remove and get out of here, because like it's been part of the game forever. As an infielder, you put your foot down. There's way like
you can't drop your knee. It's been there forever. Now as you're catching the ball to try to tag the guy out.
Joey Wendell, they asked him about it, and he goes, I didn't even know that they implemented this. He's like, I've been doing this all my whole life as a middle infielder. And apparently they made this rule. Right. I mean, they made this rule in the offseason. You can't do that anymore. I don't know for sure if it's on a pickoff or just any time, but you can't do it anymore. Right. And if you do it, that runner
another
is going
base.
And getting awarded another
get base.
He
another
didn't
base.
Even know. So, good job.
Also, it was a pickoff.
The runner was on second.
And they gave him third.
And I believe they tried to – yeah. That's why I say I don't know if it's for pickoffs. Exactly. Yes. And Joey Wendell, after the game, was like, I didn't even know this is a new rule. Like, what are we doing, MLB? Hey – we're making crazy rules up, and the players don't even know about it. So there you go. That's my answer. Remove that rule and everything else. Next question from your boy, NYMGI. He's got a question for both of us, same question. For Bill and Casey, do you think the rise of analytics has cut into Boris's ability to get long-term deals like he used to? It seems that teams have more info to dispute his famous quote-unquote binders that he used to use.
Go ahead.
You want to take this one?
I mean, I have my thought on it for sure.
Oh yeah, no.
I think that the two contracts that the Dodgers signed completely destroyed the financial landscape of Major League Baseball, and that automatically made guys that have proved themselves like Snell and Montgomery, as opposed to Yamamoto, believe that they were worth up maybe not the same amount of money, but a close amount of money. I think that that is what kind of changed things. Obviously, analytics, schmanalytics, whatever, it doesn't matter. I don't think paying pitchers 8, 9, 10-year contracts is ever a good idea, as we talk about Garrett Cole's elbow right now. But I honestly believe that those two signings this offseason completely changed the landscape. Let's see what next winter brings with the Boris clients to make before we make a jump decision that analytics has changed the way that his clients are treated. I think that the two contracts out in LA just completely blew the offseason apart.
I agree with you. The Dodgers and what happened with Yamamoto and obviously Otani changed everything. So, I agree with you on that. And also, I'll just add this. I agree with Bill. I do think that there's a lot more info out there. So you call it analytics, call it what you want. I'm just going to call it information that helps now go against Boris and what he's trying to prove for his clients. Now teams have analytics, info, call it, again, whatever you want, that they can come back and rebuttal. So it's getting a little harder for the big
let's see
the
what
big
next
agent
winter,
that
let's
is
see what
Mr.
Next
Boris. We'll leave it at that.
Before we we'll have that same question.
I agree. There is a lot of Boris clients available in next winter for free agents. So plenty to talk about. Two more questions. We have Dylan, and he goes. It's Dylan, and I'm sorry, Dylan. 9589. He goes, I'm back for more. Bill and Casey, same question. I'm a big Nate Lavender fan, and I'm upset that they already sent him down having a great spring. What are your impressions on him early, and how fast can he get back to the big leagues?
Go ahead.
Good question. You want me to take it first? They sent Nate Lavender down for one reason and one reason only. He's not on the 40-man roster, so they would have to DFA somebody to put him on. That and the fact he is a left-handed pitcher, and they already have two that is in the bullpen making the team, Brooks Raley and Jake Dietman. So having three lefties in the bullpen, not the worst thing, but it's kind of over the top. Lavender is young. He will be up early. Probably because of an injury. Depth is always big. We don't root for injuries. I like Lavender. He has a lot of Billy Wagner vibes. Same delivery. He doesn't throw 100 miles an hour, but the deception, everybody says, he throws 92 as the lefty, and he's got that Billy Wagner wind up and everything, and it throws the hitter off. That 92 looks like a lot like 95 to 98. So he had a great spring. They did send them down, but not on the 40-man, and they already had Beekman and Raley. That's how
I totally agree with that. I think that's I read a little bit. They were talking about the extension he gets on his fastball, that his fastball plays a little bit higher than the numbers. He's young. He's only thrown 100 innings in the minor leagues. His numbers have been very, very good. I think that if something goes wrong, I would expect to see him sooner rather than later, but maybe the second half of the season, depending on how things are going.
Yeah. We'll definitely see Lavender this year. Definitely. Last question. And thank you for the question, Dylan. This is from Steve N. YFD 917. Got a question for you, Bill. Bill, my son, 15 years old, has a pretty good fastball, but has problems locating when behind in the count. What advice, mentally or physically, or both, would you give him? I saw this question,
so I've got a little bit of time to think about it. First things first, what I see with young catchers is them automatically sitting at corners right away, and that will get you behind in the count. As young pitchers are not necessarily known for the best command. So I would say this. I would have a talk with your son about having a talk with his catcher about the way that things go about at the professional level. Early in the count, you throw to halves of the plate. If you get ahead in the count, you throw to thirds of the plate. If you get way ahead in the count, that's when you throw to corners. If you do find yourself falling behind, don't try to hit corners. Sometimes you have to take your medicine. And this is what I tell the players that I work with. Hitting is extremely hard. Don't try to be perfect with your pitches. You will throw more perfect pitches, actually, which I mean by that is, so if you're struggling a little bit, if you're trying to throw it to the corners, you're struggling a little bit. You don't know where it's going. So you need to aim for the big part of the plate, knowing that if I don't know exactly where it's going, it's not going to the middle of the plate. And what's on either side of the middle of the plate? The corners. So be more aggressive over the plate and take your medicine. They either hit it or they don't. The guys either make the play or they don't. Hitting is exceptionally hard. Sometimes we give hitters too much credit, and we think like we have to throw perfect pitches in order to get them out. That's not the case. So I would say first things first, make sure your catcher's not sitting on the corners right away as a 15-year-old. Second thing, pitch to halves, to thirds, to corners, depending on the count. And then if you are getting behind, you got to go after them. You got to go after them, and don't try to make perfect pitches. And they either make the play or they don't. They either hit it or they don't. That's it.
That is great advice. So, Steve, if you're listening, and hope you are, because you wrote in, relay that to your son. You have a former major league pitcher right there giving you great advice. So, very good question. And thank you, Bill, for answering.
And
that's
I wish
a great
the
answer to help out Steve's son, 15 years old. That absolutely. That's going to put a bow on the mailbag. Of course, always great questions. We thank everybody who sent them in. Great answers from Bill, my answers. Yeah, I'm not a former major league player, but we will. And again, if you're new to the show, our audience is growing. So that is always a good thing. And Bill and I and Steve, our producer, very happy about the growth. We always do the mailbag every episode. Shay_hello. We'll put out a tweet, ask your questions. And like you just heard, we will answer them live on the air. We want to thank everybody for their questions with the mailbag. As always, we read them live on the air. And as promised, we're going to give clue number three, the last clue on the new feature of the Shalo podcast. All you got to do, follow Shalo Pod on Twitter. Also, screenshot that you are following us on Shalo Media on YouTube with that. And your guess of the three clues. And we've given out two. Here's the last one. This player, and again, we've given out two clues. Clue three. This player has won 25 games in his career or more for three different teams, but not the team that he started or finished with. So I'll read it one more time. A little confusing, but not really. This player won 25, and that is a hint, by the way, 125, that's actually a huge hint, 125 games in his career for three different teams, but not the team he made his MLB debut with and the finish that he finished his career with. So we gave you three clues. The winner, and if there's more, we'll put you in a randomizer wheel and pick the winner. Hold it up to the screen right here. A Jeff Kent signed autographed baseball. He was playing second base when Bill Pulsifer made his debut. Here it is. If you could see it, if you were listening, I swear I just put it up on the TV. For the sake of time, we will not do quick pitches today because we're a little bit over and people have stuff to do. Any last words before we wrap it up, Mr.
Pulsifer? Just thanks to all the subscribers. I see that we hit over 1,000 on the subscribes and the downloads, which is great. And thanks for everybody that listens on a regular basis. Thanks for the questions. And I appreciate that people are digging the show and getting into it.
Yeah, I totally agree. We've, like Bill said, over 1,000 downloads in 29 or up until 28 episodes is pretty good. So thank you all. Spread the news, follow, like, subscribe. And that's going to do it. And of course, don't forget about our first giveaway that we are doing. The three clues during this podcast. I've given you all that you need to know. Good luck, everybody. Direct message at Say Hello Pod, your guests, with your screenshots. So for Stephen White, Bill Pulsifer, my name is Casey Lynn. Thank you all for watching or listening to the Say Hello Podcast, and we will catch you next week.